Welcome to episode 55 of Tucker Center Talks with me, your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie. In this episode, I talk to Dr. Meg Hancock about a new initiative, the Pipeline Project, which is a study on the state of women in intercollegiate athletic administration. Tune in to learn more about this important new work and download the report at the-pipeline-project.org. I love this work so much as a parallel project to our Women in College Coaching Report Card. So let's talk. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center, a first-of-its-kind, world-class research center and thought leader around girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I talk to, amplify, and support my colleagues, amazing women who study sport and gender. And today, I'm talking with Dr. Meg Hancock, pronoun she, they, who is an associate professor in the Department of Health and Sport Sciences at the University of Louisville. They are passionate about gender and diversity in the workplace and creating inclusive and inspiring communities with sports organizations, which I might add is very much needed. And specific to their line of work, today we're talking about the Pipeline Project. So let's talk. Welcome to Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Hancock.
Thank you so much. It is an absolute honor to be here, Dr. Lavoie, and great job pronouncing Louisville.
I have struggled with that over the years. I think I've got it down pretty good, but not maybe as good as natives.
That's fair. But you did a great job.
Thank you. All right. So we're really excited to talk to you about your new project, the Pipeline Project. But before we get to that, tell us, how did you get to Louisville? What's your career pathway?
Oh, wow. So I will say this, that I have enjoyed every step of my career. And when I look back at kind of where it all started, it actually began in college. I was a Division III basketball player for a couple years. And when I realized I was not going to go to the WNBA, I figured it might be time for me to focus a little bit on school. But I wanted to stay in athletics. And so I developed a mentorship with my athletic director, Dr. Valerie Cushman. It was at Randolph-Macon Women's College. And I just said, what do I need to do to be where you are in however many years? And Dr. Cushman was the athletic director and a faculty member in our sports studies program. And I just thought her job was the coolest. And so she sat down with me and we had a conversation about education, advanced degrees, things to think about in terms of the career. And so given her feedback, I went on to get my master's degree. And once I completed my master's degree, I went to work at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire, and had some awesome mentors there in the athletic department. Josie Harper, who was the athletic director at the time, as well as Drew Galbraith, who is now the athletic director at Trinity College in Connecticut. And both just really encouraged me to continue to learn and continue to grow professionally. But one of the things that I realized when I was at Dartmouth is that I really wanted to get my PhD and I really enjoyed facilitating conversations. And so in 2008, it became time for me to begin the application process. And in 2009, I moved to Louisville. I am a native Kentuckian, but when you live outside of Louisville, you never think you're going to move to Louisville. And so,
right. Okay.
And so I came to Louisville to get my PhD, and I have been here ever since. So it's been 15 years. Decided to stay on the academic side, work with students, but also work with athletic organizations, and have had an absolute blast over the last 15 years.
Wow. So let me just back a couple of things. So you did your undergrad at Randolph-Macon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And are they still an all women's college?
They are not. So Okay. They went co-ed in 2007. I graduated in 2003.
Okay.
And, you know, I think it's, obviously, that was a lot of consternation for folks. And I'll be the first to tell you, like, I never thought that I would go to an all-women's college, but it was absolutely the best decision that I could have made. And talk about just a wonderful educational environment, but also one in which I was able to gain a lot of really valuable leadership skills. But certainly, given the economics often associated with single-sex institutions, they decided to go co-ed in 2007 to maintain viability, and I would rather them still be there in some form than not there at all. So, yeah, so still stay in touch with folks there and do a little bit of adjuncting for them as well in their sport leadership master's program. And I think it's important to stay connected in that way.
Absolutely. So, as also a former Division III athlete and a former Division III coach at an all-women's college, Wellesley,
Okay, awesome.
I understand the value and the power and the amazing things that happen in an all-women's environment. I mean, literally coaching there was my first job right out of college, and it changed my life. And I was thinking, why didn't I go to Wellesley? I mean, no offense to Gustavus Adolphus College. I love my alma mater, but I think I would have really thrived in an all-women's environment. But it never crossed my mind. So we have a few things in common there. And I also loved how you just named a lot of your mentors along the way that helped you get to where you are, because none of us get to where we are alone. So
Yes.
I love that. Okay, so you're at Louisville and you've been there and you're teaching at your doctoral alma mater, which is what we also have in common, because I was at University of Minnesota and I'm still there. But tell us about what is this pipeline project? I am really excited to learn more about it.
Absolutely. So, the pipeline project is something that I have mulled over in my mind for the last 15 years.
Okay.
And it's something that I wish that I'd gotten to a little bit earlier, but I stepped into some administration and some leadership roles. And certainly when that happens, sometimes research takes a back seat a bit. But as I mentioned, I've had some really important mentors in my career that helped me grow and develop. But I have also had some really not great experiences that have really caused me to question why are women more underrepresented, particularly in the intercollegiate athletic space, and how can we help folks move through the pipeline so that they achieve their professional goals, recognizing that not everyone wants to advance to the athletic director role. But if we simply say that it's a system issue, we are also not accounting for the agency that women have in their own careers as well. And so the Pipeline Project really is about not just looking at proportions, but it is about kind of continuing the work of Acosta and Carpenter from their 37-year report, which I think the last one was in 2014. It's also about adding to the conversation about with the racial and gender report card down at Tides. We specifically look at where women are in kind of the managerial pipeline. And so we look at that through four phases. So an entry-level position, kind of a middle tier, middle management one, middle management two, and then executive leadership roles. And we can really begin to see where women begin their careers, but also where they tend to leak out of the pipeline and specific to what areas, right? So
Yes.
we're looking at compliance, we're looking at facilities, we're looking at name, image, and likeness, we're looking at marketing and communications. And so we can really get a sense of where women are, where they're going. But that also translates into it's important to think about how we keep great talent in the pipeline. Not all attrition is bad, but we want to make sure that we're keeping great folks. But we also want to begin to have conversations around career pathways. And I think that becomes relevant for people who are interested in working in the college athletic environment, all the way up to those who are leading in the athletic environment. And so the Pipeline Project is about that illustration, but it's about making sure that people have awareness as to what is happening, but that there is also clarity as to the different roles and kind of pathways that are available for people, specifically women, if they're interested in moving or advancing within intercollegiate athletic ranks.
Yeah, I really am so excited that you and your two collaborator colleagues, let's give them a shout out. Just
Yes.
tell us who they are.
Yes. So one is Nick Kopka, and Nick is a doctoral student here in the sport administration program. And Nick is a wonderful analyst and has helped me a lot with spreadsheets. And he's a great mind, a great thinker. And I love having him on the team. And the other person is Dr. Erin Green, who is currently at Temple University. Erin and I worked together when she was here at the University of Louisville, and she has worked in college athletics. Her husband is a Division I coach. And so the intercollegiate athletic environment is very important to us. It's near and dear to us for various reasons. And being women who have worked in the industry, work with students who want to be in the industry, but also see the opportunity that is available for folks is what is really exciting to us.
Yeah. It's so important to document, as you know, with data, not just, you know, with our Women in College Coaching report card, people often say, well, you are just counting women. Like, yeah, yes, that is true. And we know that that's not going to actually change the system, but we need some data to know who's going where and when. And I love this idea of tracking these women through a career pipeline, thus the clever name, the Pipeline Project, where they're leaking out or where they're ending up. Like, where's the end game? Because people often say, oh, well, women don't want to be Power Five athletic directors. It's too stressful. And, you know, all the narratives around that. So women are opting out or choosing to not follow that pathway. But an athletic director isn't the end all be all.
Right.
You know, not everybody wants to do that. So this pipeline. So let me ask you this. What are some top level findings? Like what do you find? This is year one, correct?
This is year one. That's correct.
Year one. So this will be a longitudinal analysis where you can keep tracking these women over time. And now I know why you need Nick, the spreadsheet guy,
that's
because
right.
that becomes really tricky over time. So yeah, tell me some of the cool findings that you have in year one.
So I think one of the things that's really important to recognize, and probably not a surprise to most folks, is that the structures in intercollegiate athletic departments are growing, particularly as budgets grow. We see some expansion within the organization. What's really interesting in that is there have been more than 1,000 new assistant and associate athletic director positions added in NCAA Division I programs. And so when we really look at that, that's a lot. And
wow.
This is in the last 10 years, let me say that. And so when we think about the pipeline, previous research has said assistant athletic director titles, associate athletic director titles, and I'm speaking very broadly in that space, are kind of the start of the pipeline for folk. And when we dig into that, assistant AD roles have increased by 80%. And associate AD roles have increased by 43% in that 10-year period. Yet women, when we see kind of where how much the needle has moved, it's only moved 6% for women, which is shocking proportionally, right? So when we see in 2015, women held about 29.7% of assistant athletic director roles, and now it's risen to 35%, which is great. But we've added 80% of positions like within that time. And so recognizing like what's going on.
Right. Let me ask you that. Okay. So that is, okay, women are disproportionately underrepresented, even in new hires, which
yes.
you have an opportunity to hire women in those 1,000 positions. Okay. So I'm going to ask you to speculate here.
Okay.
Why is that? Do you think?
Ooh.
I mean, I know we're like, how much time do we have? Now, give me the sound bite. What? Why do you think that?
Sure. Sound bite would be, I think, one very clear piece that the literature suggests is that women aren't in the positions, and when I say that, or in the roles that are perceived to lead to leadership roles like the athletic director. And so the literature essentially says fundraising and development, advancement, external operation women are less represented in those roles. So just proportionally, there's already a disadvantage there. When we look at the role of sports supervision, typically the job descriptions from seeking athletic directors, they want to have folks who have sports supervision experience in revenue generating sports, which is primarily football and men's basketball. Certainly, we're seeing some growth in those areas as well. But when you dig into the research, and that's going to be some new work that we have coming out in the next month or so, women certainly do not often have the opportunity to be sports supervisors for football and men's basketball. And so, again, that is going to put them, certainly further down the pipeline than individuals who do have that role, than men who have that role. And so, I think those are two areas.
Yeah, that's a key point. It's not that women aren't qualified.
Correct.
They're not being given the opportunity to get the jobs that will lead to the upward pipeline progress.
Right.
And looking at a table, I'm looking at the Big Ten table,
Okay.
and women, because I'm in the Big Ten, so we always like to see how we're doing.
Sure.
And the Big Ten has the second, it has the highest percentage of women head coaches in the Power Five. The Ivy League has the lead for all of Division One. But the Big Ten, I don't even know. They're going to rename the Big Ten. I mean, for
That's
the Big Ten to the Power of Two, I don't know. But women, the majority of women, they're only in five positions: business office, compliance, NIL, student athlete services, and travel.
Right.
I don't even, what are they, a travel agent? What is that?
Right. And that's really when, as we kind of look through this and begin to understand these positions a little bit more, when you look at something like travel and business office, we would consider those kind of professional administrative positions that don't necessarily lead to like a chief financial officer or a chief of operations officer. Those are going to be primarily, those professional positions. And even when we look at NIL, which I think is going to be one of the areas that we keep a really keen interest on, is it's such a new position within institutions, but I think it perhaps offers the most opportunity, particularly for women, to bring their internal and external skill sets together. That NIL is one that we're going to have to keep an eye on as potentially entering into kind of that pipeline to athletic administration, because we've already seen it happen at some institutions where folks who have been highly affiliated with NIL outside the institution are now the athletic
Oh,
director.
interesting.
And yeah, and so it's going to be, that's an area that we are really going to have to pay attention to and recognize, is it going to bring more external candidates into that athletic director role than those that have experience working in college athletics and might be perceived as highly qualified for the role, but does that kind of external business perspective influence how athletic directors are going to be hired moving forward?
And I'm just scrolling through the other insights on the conferences by position, and that's pretty consistent. The business office, compliance, student athlete services, almost women are overrepresented in all of those, and NIL sort of depends on the conference. So what are some other kind of sticky ideas that, since you've launched the pipeline project, that people are sort of, that's they latch on to?
I think probably the one that I think has been most surprising to me, and I know it shouldn't be, let me say that, is that people are still going, whoa, I didn't know this. And so it's not to say that they, especially women, didn't necessarily recognize themselves as the minority within these organizations, but to have numbers put to it in this way, I think has been a little bit surprising to people. But then that has helped me recognize that, and from a research perspective, we, and when I say we, I'm talking about scholars, particularly engaging in this area, we have to do a better job of getting this into the mainstream, right? I know our athletic director, highly intelligent person, right? But he's probably not going to go pick up the Journal of Sport Management and read an academic article. He needs something that's going to be quick and he can get information about, he can get data about, he can get ideas with, and move forward. And so I think that's been kind of one of the most surprising things for me.
Okay. It's not surprising to me
Well,
because I'm doing what you're doing on the coaching side,
Yeah.
and I
Yeah.
can't tell you how many people are like, I had no idea that we used to have 90% Title IX and now it dropped down and we're at like just around 45%. I had no idea. And it's like, this is common sense to us because this is our world. And it's like, how could you not know that? But we forget. Like,
Yes.
people just don't know this. And I like the point that you made, especially people in power of these athletic programs, they're busy people. So you have to make it bite-sized, accessible, public-facing. What does this mean to me, and why should I care?
Right. And the other thing too is when people initially look at those entry level positions, women occupy 44% of those entry level positions. It's not 50-50, but I think it's great to see, like, from a proportional perspective, it's really
Pretty
close.
close. Yep.
And so, but it's when we look at the next step and it drops in almost every conference to that first level of middle management, and then we see it bump back up a little bit more. I think we have to pay close attention to what's going on there. And I know it can be really hard for, well, not really hard. It's impossible to hit the pause button, right? We have to continue to keep moving forward. But I do think it's going to be increasingly important for athletic departments to take some time to review turnover rates. I don't think that's something that happens very often in the anecdotal conversations that I have with folks. They're not necessarily paying attention to that. And that is costing athletic departments tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Yes.
And as I mentioned, that attrition is not always a bad thing. Turnover is not always a bad thing. But when we're not really paying attention to it as to why people are leaving, is it because they're leaving for a better salary? Is it because people are leaving because they're not having a great experience with their supervisor? It's more likely that. I did some great research with Liz Taylor and Aaron at Temple and Amy Giddings, and undoubtedly, and again, this is not a surprise, but the support of the supervisor was key in retaining people. Whereas folks both quantitatively and qualitatively said, yeah, if I'm not getting the support that I need for my supervisor, then I'm out of here and I might move laterally or might leave the industry altogether. But I think it's really important that we pay attention to those turnover rates and we pay attention to how we are helping our new supervisors, our seasoned supervisors, develop skill sets that are going to be important for mitigating the impacts of turnover when it's appropriate.
Yeah, and this is the same thing that we see with women coaches is why do you leave? I don't have support. And what does that mean? I don't have resources to run my program how I want to, and I don't have the support of my administration. They don't have my back. And those two reasons, they also leave because they're not being paid. Like, I can't make a living doing this, and so I'm leaving. So I think the turnover rate, it'll be interesting to, do you have like this is the turnover rate per year? Because I know for coaches, it's around 11 to 12%.
Yeah, so this is not from us, but Lizzie Taylor and Matt Hummel did a 3-year kind of turnover perspective from 2020 to 2022. And we know there's a
Okay.
lot going on during that time.
Yeah.
48% of athletic staff, not including coaches, turned over in Division I. 48%,
Oh my gosh.
right? So let's just play this out a little bit. Let's just play this out a little bit.
Okay, that's bananas.
Right? So I was like, okay, let me look into this. And this is going to be kind of a blog post that we have coming up. But when I extrapolated that and said, all right, what do like major human resource firms say it costs, any organization to replace a person? All right. And it's basically like if somebody makes $50,000 a year, it could cost between 50% and 100% of that salary. All right, so let's just take the lower end of that, $25,000 to replace that person. When we look at that turnover and we think about the fact that there are, literally 20,000 people in FBS athletic departments alone, and we say half of those folks left, 10,000 people turned over, and then we multiply that by $25,000 each, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And, I think that that's something as we enter into this new NIL phase, and we think about how is House versus NCAA going to impact athletic departments. One of the areas that folks are really going to have to start paying attention to is that turnover rate. Now, that's not going to bring somebody, $10 million in a given year, but it is mitigating costs and allocating resources in ways that could be more beneficial to keep some of those coaches in those positions, or to think about ways that you can invest in learning and development for your staff so that they can feel supported in what they're doing.
Yeah, no, I would argue 2020 to 2022 was a very turbulent time for college athletes.
Very
So it'd
turbulent.
be interesting if they, looked at that in a non-COVID era.
Yes.
It probably because we did see that with the coaches too. There was a lot of turnover during COVID. It's coaches like,
Yes.
I cannot handle this. And I also now that's when the portal started ramping up and the NIL started, and
Yes.
coaches were thinking, I didn't sign up for this. I just want to coach lacrosse.
Which is also why I wanted to start this project this year, because of that, all of the things that you just mentioned, whether we're talking about COVID, whether we're talking about NIL, whether we're talking about the transfer portal, I think it's important to kind of start capturing that because we are entering into what I think many folks would consider a new era, a new space from Division III to Division I. And so again, it's an opportunity for us to think about what the next steps need to look like and how women can be an integral part of that.
Absolutely. Okay, give me one other kind of sticky idea that's been resonating with people about this pipeline project.
So, in addition to the data itself, we provide some key insights and solutions. And one of the areas that I think always strikes people the most, and it's probably one of the simplest, is this idea of setting clear expectations for what the role is and how people can show up in that space, because that influences so many other aspects. It influences how you're supervised, it influences how you're reviewed, what the performance expectations are. And so that's an area where even in some of the with the athletic departments that I've been working with in other spaces, they've really started to look at how they're setting expectations, how they're developing roles within their athletic department to best meet the needs of the organization, but also to be strategic about the folks that they're hiring into those positions. And when I say that, I mean in terms of their skill sets and their talents. And so I think one of the areas that folks have really appreciated are those kind of key insights and solutions, and just trying to keep it simple, but recognizing that everything has to continue to move forward, but there are some small tweaks and adjustments that can be made to make sure that people are feeling engaged in their work, and feeling valued in what they're doing.
Yeah, and it seems very like the least common denominator of how do I make my team feel engaged and cared about and given the resources to succeed, and how do I help them grow and develop, and how do I mentor them? These things I think seem like common sense and just often are not happening in athletic departments. And especially if they're turning over at these large rates, there's no culture. How do you have a department where you have a good culture of people that have been there so you can grow the culture and develop people when there's just a mass carousel of employees?
It's a challenge, and I'll give you an example. So I was talking to someone in an athletic department, and they said, "Well, I really wanted a raise. And the only way that I could get a raise was to move in a position of supervision. And so I became a manager of people, and I hate managing people." And I thought, oh no, right? Like, we've got somebody in this role who needed more money, wanted,
Not going to succeed.
no, not going to succeed. And if we know that people leave because they don't have great supervisors, like, we've just exponentially affected the employee experience. And it's like, whoa, okay, we have to kind of reset and understand the decisions that we're making and the implications that they have. And they're usually much broader than a single individual, and recognizing what that looks like too.
So I think distilling this down, I'm looking at some of the graphs in the report, and this is also true in the Women College Coaching Report Card. When you start at assistant coach, associate head coach, and you could track it up to athletic director, although that's not kind of the pathway anymore. As the position becomes more visible, lucrative, and powerful, you see fewer women. So, as researchers, you can say, yes, women have agency, they might choose different pathways, and there's something about opportunity and power in the system that marginalizes and discriminates against women.
Yes, I think both can be and absolutely are true. And we do have, whether it's the pipeline project, whether it's the research that's been done over the past 50 years on organizational structures and gender in athletic administration, there's absolutely evidence to suggest it is both and.
Okay. Well, we can have you back on when you have a couple years of data and you're starting to see some trends and tell us more about what you're finding. But let's switch gears here. And what advice would you give to young women scholars and researchers?
I think about what is really fulfilling to you. And what is fulfilling to you might not always be the most popular in terms of research. It might not always be what people think. Well, look, there are a lot of folks that say looking at gender and leadership is played out, but we clearly have evidence to suggest that it is not. And we certainly recognize that in this pipeline project, we are looking at gender. I want to make sure that folks understand I'm recognizing that there are so many other identities, and the intersections of those identities are so important as we continue this work. And I think that needs to be done. But for young scholars out there, I always encourage you to think about, when you're reading something, when you're learning something, thinking like, I didn't know that, or I hadn't thought of it in that way, or even I'd like to learn more about that. And using that as an opportunity to continue to be curious and continue to be creative, even in spaces where someone is saying, that's not important, or that's already been played out. Because again, I think there's still so much that, we have to learn. There's so much that we need to explore, and there are so many other ways that we can consider perspectives and experiences. And so just to continue that level of curiosity and thinking about different ways to leverage your voice. And certainly, I think the Tucker Center has done an amazing job in helping women scholars with that. The Pipeline Project is also designed to elevate women scholars. And so we want to make sure that we're doing that as well. But really taking time to stay curious, to research the things that are important to you, because I think those are the things that might take a long time, but they will keep you hungry, and keep you moving forward. And I think that those things are vitally important as we too are underrepresented in our field. And so it's increasingly important to make sure that our work and our voices continue to be heard.
Agree with that. And on episode 54 of Tucker Center Talks, when we were talking to Zennie Ofebu, she was like, look, I'm an unapologetic me searcher. And I'm like, that is so good. And I'm crediting her for that. And I have like repeated it about 20 times since then. But it's to your point, Meg, is that do work that lights you up, and that's usually because you have a vested interest in it, and it has something to do with your identity. So go forth.
Go forth. I think
Go
that is
forth.
so important. And, I think that that is something that has come with experience and age on my end. And now I'm just like, I'm doing what I want. I won't use the word that I was getting ready to use, but I'm doing what I want
Yes.
because I know it's important. I know it's impactful. I know that there are folks out there that need to hear it. There are folks out there that will amplify that voice. And that's something that I also want to continue to do for all scholars, who are in this work and want to move it forward.
Yeah, agree. Okay, we're gonna wrap this up with a speed round.
All right, I'm excited.
There's three questions. There's no right or wrong answers. Whatever comes to your mind, what is at the top of your playlist right now?
Chapel Roan, Pink Pony Club.
Okay, now my doctoral student, Anna Gorovich, who usually is my co-host, she is a huge Chapel Roan fan and claims that she found her before she got popular. So it's too bad she's not on with us today. Okay, number two, who's your favorite badass woman right now?
Dawn Staley.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Did Watch the game yesterday?
I didn't. I actually opened my app up this morning and was like, oh. I just respect everything that she's done. And yeah, I think there's so much there. That's a whole podcast in itself.
Fair enough. I did watch the game, so I'm referring to the South Carolina UCLA matchup in women's basketball. South Carolina was upset. UCLA, they are legit. So it's
Yes.
going to be a great season of women's basketball. All right, last speed round question. What gender and sports scholar has influenced your work the most?
That's such a hard one. I'm actually probably going to start with, or just, yeah, start with my doctoral mentor, who is Dr. Mary Humps. And she's done a lot of early work in that area, but the list could go on and on and on, from Ellen Sarowski to Laura Burton to Heidi Grappendorf to you. And so it's the list is long. And so I try to say the names as much as I can, as in the spaces that I have available.
Okay, I love that. And that's always a hard question, because nobody can ever just say one person, because then they feel guilty. Like, oh, but I didn't name all these other people. So you are not bucking the trend. All right. Well, thank you so much for being our guest on Tucker Center Talks today, Dr. Hancock. That's a wrap for this episode of Tucker Center Talks. Be sure to check out our evidence-based resources on our website at tuckercenter.org. Thank you to our producer and Tucker team member, Lindsay Hofer. And thank you for listening to Tucker Center Talks. As we wrap, support others and let data tell the story. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport.